A birthday share. Gary's celebrating 12 years clean tonight, so.
Thanks, Simon. My name's Gary, I'm an addict. Can you hear me at the back?
Yeah?
Great. Sometimes it's kind of a bit of a struggle in here with that. But yeah, it's nice to be here. It's nice to be at this meeting. And kind of thinking about, I'm sitting here and there's like quite a few people in the room who know me and quite a few people in the room who, you know, who've heard me speak before, and there's people here I sponsor and my fiance is here and you know, and I kind of sit here and think, oh God, you're not going to come out with all that same story again that you've told time and time again, corny one-liners and blah blah, you know. And it's kind of, but what I also have to remember when I'm saying that is that there's people in this room that have never probably heard me speak before, and there's one guy here who's never heard me speak before, you know. So, you know, and I always have to remember that. And, you know, and I rang my sponsor up about that because I spoke at the convention recently, thanks to Jane, he put me forward, she was doing some programming there, and I spoke at the convention. And after the convention, I got hit with loads of different people saying, can you come speak at my meeting, can you speak at my meeting, you know. And I spoke at loads of meetings in like really close succession over a few weeks, and I rang my sponsor up, and my sponsor travels a lot and speaks a lot. And I said to him, you know, I keep going speaking at these meetings and I feel like sometimes like I'm saying the same stuff over and over again. And he said, if the Rolling Stones do a good gig, he said, you know, the next night they don't think, let's rearrange the set list. Do you know what I mean? They go and do it again. And if the stuff, you know, the stories you tell work, then tell them. Do you know what I mean? And because some of the stories I tell, I've been doing this with, like, you know, Simon says, 12 years, and I've spoken a lot of meetings, and sometimes the stories I tell that have a kind of, that can sum up a lot about me as an addict and me as a using addict very quickly, do you know what I mean? Without having to go into the sort of, well, I was born in 1969 in a little town in Lancashire, and, you know, and I've got one brother and my mum and dad, you know. It's like I don't need to kind of go in and do all that. I can kind of just cut to the chase. And because, you know, it's really important in NA, and I always say this, you know, I sometimes hear people come to meetings and it's this kind of like, I don't know, to me it sounds a bit of like spiritual bravado, do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to talk about my using, do you know what I mean? Because I'm so in recovery, do you know what I mean? And the thing about it is, I always talk about my using. I think it's absolutely essential to talk about that. The reason being that addicts are incredibly cynical, and we have to know that the people that are relaying a spiritual message have been where we are or where we have been in order for us to trust them. So I always talk about that, you know, and you know, I love this meeting. I'm really glad we started this meeting. I know there's certain factions in NA that when it first started were kind of, you know, it got their backs up and they didn't like it, and, you know, and it's like typical addict stuff, you know. Anything new or any kind of change, it's like, you know, I went to a meeting and someone came up to me, what's this new meeting, 2 45-minute speakers, what's that all about, you know, no sharing time, you know, and what about me, and you know, and it's kind of, and it's kind of, you know, and what happened was my sponsor came, my sponsor lives in America, and he's, you know, he's very, very active, and he came over here, and he was saying to me, you know, the UK, there's always that thing that when we have a convention, it's like, oh, and we've got somebody from America coming over who's going to speak. Do you know what I mean? Like there's something in the water over there that gives them better quality recovery than we have over here. Do you know what I mean? And my sponsor sort of pointed out, he said, one of the things I've noticed, he came to a few meetings with me and stuff, and he said, one of the things I've noticed in the UK is that you don't have speaker meetings. He said, so if you don't have speaker meetings, how are you going to cultivate good speakers? You know, I spoke at that convention, and it's the first time I've been asked to speak for 40 minutes, and I know there's a few people in here who've got clean time, and, you know, it's like to explain the full deal of, you know, what it was like and how it is now, do you know what I mean? And to go into the ins and outs of what it takes to stay clean, it's pretty tough going doing it in 20 minutes, you know. Paul Gills can attest to that one, you know what I mean? Anyone that was here the other week. But no, it's kind of, you know, it's really tough to sort of try and squeeze it all into 20 minutes, do you know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm really glad we've started this format here, you know. And I remember a few years ago, somebody rang me up who'd heard me speaking at a meeting and said, I want you to come and speak at the Bournemouth Convention. And I said, oh, great, that'd be fantastic. I'd love to do that. You know, I haven't been down to Bournemouth before. He said, yeah, the Convention Committee have asked us if you can send a tape down. And I was like, oh, well, I ain't got a tape. So what do I do now? Like, go home and, like, put a ghetto blaster in my bedroom and record myself. And, you know, and that's one of the kind of hitches, really, where, you know, people who might have a good message to relay are not given the opportunity to relay it because, you know, if they want to get on, programming committees want to know what they're getting. And nobody's got any kind of sample of their goods, do you know what I mean? So it's good that, you know, we record the speakers here and that we have this format. And I really like it, you know, and I like to sit out there and just kind of plug in and listen and not have that kind of internal dialogue that goes, you know, I'll have to remember that bit because I identified there and you know, and, oh, am I going to speak? Oh, no, not tonight. No, yeah, I will speak. And, you know, that kind of conversation. So, and if I do speak, what will I sound like? And, you know, and just to sort of sit back and just kind of absorb and listen, you know, I enjoy that. You know, I'll get a wet of that. It's great to be, you know, 12 years clean. It really is great to be 12 years clean. You know, my motivation for staying clean now is so much different than what it was when I was 6 months clean. It's very, very different. You know, when I was 6 months clean, I felt like I was just sprinting as fast as I could away from what I'd just come from because it had frightened the living daylights out of me. You know, it took me to a place of rock bottom, you know, and the place of rock bottom, and every addict can identify with this. The place of rock bottom for me was when I was on my knees crying out in desperation to a God that I didn't believe in. Fucking help me. Please help me. Get me out of this. Somebody do something. Just get me out of this. You know, and that for me was the bottom. You know, there'd been all kinds of circumstances that had gone on in my addiction and all kinds of, you know, horrible situations. But that final bottom, I remember it really well. I remember kind of, you know, it's bizarre how it happened. I'll tell you a quick story. There was a drug dealer who'd moved into Blackburn, yeah? And I mean, I did a lot of my using around sort of Blackburn. I used to go over to Manchester and buy drugs and... This guy had moved into Blackburn and he'd set up selling up there. And it got to the stage at the end of my addiction where people did not want to drive into Moss Side with me. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, I was liable to kind of get out of the car, go off to score and then kind of come running out of the estate like Indiana Jones. Do you know what I mean? Going, start the car, go. Do you know what I mean? And like... So what happened was, you know, I'd become notorious for ripping dealers off, basically, you know, giving them money with kind of betting slips packed in the middle, you know, changing £20 notes for 4 or 5 so it looks like a bigger bundle and all that sort of stuff. And this particular guy had moved into Blackburn, he'd set up shop and he was running things up there at the time. And I went round to score and he pulled me to the side this day and he kind of pulled me to the side and he said, I just want to let you know something. I know you think you're a bit smart going over to Manchester, ripping all them manks off. But I'll tell you what, if you ever try and rip me off, I'll kill you. And it don't matter how long it takes me, it don't matter how much gear it's for, I'll kill you. Yeah, and so what happened was a Friday night, this was, I think it warned me about that on the sort of Monday. The Friday night comes and I was running about, it was Friday night and I was running about desperately trying to get some more gear together because I wasn't sick, but I wasn't right, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, it's never going to last me through the night, and I want something like a little bit in the morning so I can get up and go out and shoplift or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And plan some sort of mission to try and get some money together. So it's Friday night, and I'm trying to suss out how to get some money together, and then some kid comes up to me. And what I used to do was, you know, at the end of me using, it was sad, do you know what I mean? It was like I used to get these kind of weighed half grams of a gear and then kind of carve a couple of £10 wraps out of it, do the rest of it and try and sell the £10 wraps and go and get another half gram of gear, do you know what I mean, on the side of sort of bits of shoplifting and just really small time stuff, do you know what I mean? And so what happened, some kids come up to me and go, have you got any wraps on you? I've got, and he was half pissed, this kid, and he's got a tenner. And I thought, a tenner, it's a start. Do you know what I mean? So I've rung the guy up and said, the dealer, and said, listen, you know, have you got an half gram there? He said, yeah, I've got gear here, no worries. I said, right, I'll be down there. I'll be down in about half an hour. So then it's plan, how am I going to get myself down there? Do you know what I mean? So I managed to sort of convince some other kid that, you know, he thinks I've got money in my pockets. I'm off to buy a bit of gear. I'll sort you out if you can run me down to Blackburn because it's 5 miles down the road or whatever. And we get down there. I've got a tenner in the pocket, do you know what I mean? And it's only 30 quid for the half gram. By the time I've got the lift together now, it's kind of 12:30 at night, do you know what I mean? And so I kind of turn up on his doorstep and knock on the door, and I know I've got a tenner, do you know what I mean? And I know he's not about Leon's, do you know what I mean? So I bang on the door, and he's come to the door, and he's scarred down one side of his face, do you know what I mean? And he's kind of got this kind of, it's a scrappy council house, do you know what I mean? Full of kind of all kinds of electrical goods that he's been swapping off smackheads all week. And he turns up at the door, and I go, you got that half gram? And he goes, yeah. And he puts it in my hand, and I pull out the tenner, and I've got a tenner and an excuse, do you know what I mean? And I start trying to tell him the excuse. He's going, give me the gear back. And there's no way it's leaving my hand now, do you know what I mean? It's cemented, do you know what I mean? So I end up kind of, I end up in this situation where his girlfriend, who's known me for years, has got one of his arms, do you know what I mean, trying to drag him back into the hallway, and his other arm's reaching out, trying to grab at me, do you know what I mean, and I'm going, I've got a gyro in the morning, I swear, I'll be back, and he says, if I don't see you tomorrow, you're dead, you're finished, the door slams, and then I'm off, and what happened was, I kind of woke up the next day, and I was like, oh no, what do I do now, do you know what I mean, I've used all the gear, and I had supposed to be getting some speed for somebody, that falls through, and then I ended up going around shoplifting, got myself a tenner together, got a bag, ended up in a flat in the estate about two streets away from where he lives, in this crusty's flat, dogs in there and all kind of stunk the place, yeah, and I did this £10 bag, and then I had to walk home, and I remember I had to walk home 4 miles. I remember walking home and breaking down in tears as I was walking up the road. It was like a 4 mile walk, it's beginning of September, it's just starting to nip a bit, do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, oh no, another winter with an habit, do you know what I mean? Not again, you know? And I've kind of, you know, all my clothes are gone, do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not naked, but I mean, I've sold all my decent clothes, you know, any jacket that's got anything like, you know, it's gone, you know what I mean? I've got a scratty hooded top on and a pair of jeans and a pair of trainers that have got holes in the bottom. And I bumped into this guy, right? I'm walking on and I bumped into this guy. And this guy, he was one of them people who took too much acid, do you know what I mean? And kind of completely lost the plot, do you know what I mean? Apparently the story was, he went out to Ibiza, took loads and loads of acid, and rolled, but when he got his flight back to England, he turned up at Manchester Airport in a pair of boxer shorts with a passport. Do you know what I mean? He kind of literally, like, he lost it out in Ibiza, and he kind of got into God, this guy. He became a Christian, do you know what I mean? And I bumped into him, and we knew each other when we were kids. So I bump into him, and he's gone, he's come up to me, and I've been walking, like, you know, I've just walked 4 miles, do you know what I mean? Kind of tears streaming down my cheeks, and he's come up to me and gone, he's gone, how you doing, Gaz? I've gone, not too good, mate, not so good, really. I don't know where I'm sleeping that night, do you know what I mean? And he says, you still on the smack? I said, yeah. He said, the power of the Lord can get you off that stuff. I said, really? He says, yeah. He says, I'm staying in a Stonham hostel up the road. He said, if you come and stay at a Stonham hostel with me, he said, Jesus Christ will get you off that stuff. I'll try anything at this stage, you know what I mean? So I end up in this Stonham hostel, yeah, and a sleeping bag on the floor, do you know what I mean? And he's going, right, pray with me. And it sounds bad that I'm I'm on my knees with him, do you know what I mean? And I'm on my knees and I'm praying. And I'm in this sleeping bag and I'm rattling it out in this sleeping bag, and then every kind of half an hour he's going, get up, we're praying, yeah. And he's got the Bible out and I'm in the sleeping bag and he's got his hand on my head, do you know what I mean? I'm like, and I thought, I can't take this, do you know what I mean? I really can't take this. And so I said to him, I said, yeah, I'm a bit peckish, do us a favour. I said, what? I said, pop the shop and get me a pot noodle. He's got a computer there, do you know what I mean? And I've been eyeing the computer up for the last few hours. I think, and it's not a problem, I'll go get it together. So he's gone off to get me a pot noodle. Straight away, I'm unhooking all these wires and I'm in my pyjamas, do you know what I mean? I've got a set of pyjamas on that is sort of stuck to me, do you know what I mean? So I grab some woolly jumper, throw the woolly jumper on, throw my trainers on, got all this computer gear into a box and took off, do you know what I mean? And this guy was like, you know, he's a casualty, do you know what I mean? It's one of them things where gangsters are one thing, but these type of people, are kind of, you know, it's like axe murderer type people, do you know what I mean? People that completely lose their plot and go and do some, you know what I mean? Like, attack a school ground full of kids or whatever. You know, one of them type, I thought, you know, real screw loose stuff. And I've had to make amends to this guy in recovery, actually. But what happened was, I took off, I sold the equipment, and the next day, I woke up and I thought, I'm going to go and... I thought, there's nothing else for it. I'm going to go and burgle my mum and dad's house. I'm off to burgle my mum and dad's house. And what had happened was I'd sold the computer for like fucking three £10 bags, one of which I'd had to give away to another guy to get, so he put me up for the night, do you know what I mean? And I'd done these two bags and it was gone, do you know what I mean? And I woke up sitting next to me, I thought, right, oh, that was it. I went and rang this treatment facility, call it a treatment facility. It's one of them where, you know, you've been in three months and they take you to the pub. One of them sort of treatment facilities where you do a lot of digging and stuff and scrubbing floors. And I rang them up because I'd walked out of there sort of 6 months earlier and asked them if they'd have me back. And they said, oh, call in a week's time. And I didn't have a week, do you know what I mean? I'm thinking, just getting through till bedtime tonight is a long way away. Never mind next Monday. Next Monday was like, it's like talking to me about 2020, do you know what I mean? It's like, as I am now, do you know what I mean? It was just like too far away. So I thought, I'm going to burgle my mum and dad's house. So I've gone up to mum and dad's house, and I got there, and it's chucking down in rain, yeah? And I'm soaked, I'm like a drowned rat, and I'm sick, do you know what I mean? And I'm looking in through the window, and I can see the living room that I've grown up in, do you know what I mean? And I thought, I can't do this. I just can't do this. I can't bring myself to do this to them. I've put them through that much. You know, the amount of stuff I've taken from them, the amount of lies I've given them, the amount of worry I've caused them, the amount of fear they've lived in for the last however many years, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I thought, I'm going to go into town and try and get some methadone. We're going to town, stand outside the chemist in the rain. Nobody turns up for about 25 minutes. So I thought, sack this, health centre. Go direct to the source. Go into the health centre. It's like 11 o'clock by now. All the doctor's surgeries are closed from 11 till 1. What do I do now? So I come out the health centre, see the social services across the street. Social services have got... I just thought, they might be able to help me. I'm desperate. You know, until in desperation, we sort help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm desperate, do you know what I mean? And I end up in this social services place, and I go in there, and the woman kind of sits down with me in this kind of cubicle with a phone. And she says to me, so what can I do for you? I said, well, I'm an heroin addict. I've got nowhere to live. I really need help. And she's like, so what sort of help? And she's real textbook, you know. And I'm like, and my drug counsellor had wrote me off months earlier as an hopeless case. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, well, I've been in rehab. I've been in, you know, I've been in hospital. I've been to the doctor, community drug team, psychiatrist, da-da-da. And I'm listing all this stuff off. And she turns around to me and she goes, well, from the sounds of what you've just told me, I don't think there's much we can do for you. And I just went, aah! Just started like crying, do you know what I mean? And got my head on the table. Yeah, so, and she said, you can use the phone if you want. And for some reason, some flash of inspiration, I ring Mainline in Manchester, where I used to get my needles from years earlier, and said, what rehabs do you know that will text somebody? Like now. and they kind of listed a few off, and they mentioned one that had a detox. Now, I was using in a place where there was no NA. They've got NA now, there was no NA then. They didn't have NA. So an addict like me, who suffers from the disease I suffer from, was truly powerless. I had 3 years of using with a desire to stop using, 3 years of using with a desire to stop using pretty much every day. And certainly a desire to end the consequences. But I couldn't stop doing it. So I've learned since I've come in here, I need more than a desire to stop using to stay clean. It's not about not wanting to use, staying clean in here. Do you know what I mean? So what happened, I ended up ringing up this place in near Blackpool. And They said, oh, we've had a patient's not cut. And it was the one they mentioned that had a detox. I thought, if it's not got a detox, I'll be over the wall within 24 hours. I know what I'm like. I said, yeah, somebody was meant to come in this morning. They've not turned up. I said, great. So ring back in an hour and you might be able to have their bed. I was like, fantastic. Because they used to have this thing back then, fast track funding or whatever. So anyway, I've left the social services and I thought, right, an hour's a long time, you know what I mean? I'm still sick, so I've gone to some guy's house trying to get some methadone off him. And he's got a big fat bottle of it sat there and he's going, not having any of this, you know what I mean? And then I'm going, oh, can I use your phone? So I rung a guy in Moss Side who I used to score off and give him this old banter about, yeah, I've been out of the country, but I'm getting back on my feet and I'm going to be serving up again and, you know, we can do some business and all this, you know, and he's kind of... And he's gone, well, come over, I'll lay you a 16th on. So then I've gone out in the rain again, trying to get a lift together to take me to Moss Side to pick this 16th up. Before I leave to get the lift, I've picked the phone up and rung back this treatment facility. The treatment facility have said, it was the woman in the nurse's station, said, oh, there's no one here that can deal with admissions right now. Give us your number, we'll ring you back. So I've given the number. And I've popped out without telling the kid whose phone I've used. I said, look, I'm going to be back in 10 minutes. I'll see if I can get a lift. I've scooted round trying to sort of get somebody to drive us over there. Went to about three different addresses. Nobody's in. Can't get a lift. There's a 16th waiting 25 miles up the road, but I can't get a lift, you know what I mean? So I come back to the house and I walk in and the guy whose house it is, who's got the big fat bottle of methadone, turns around and he goes, oh, we got somebody rang here for you. I said, who? He said, some treatment facility. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, I told them I was you and told them to fuck off and put the foot down. Oh, I've sworn. That won't get onto that won't get past the taping committee. So what's happened is I've said, let me use your phone. I've rung them back and said, we've got a bed. I explained what had happened. They said, it's all right, we understand. We've got a bed for you if you can get over here tonight, you know, so... I managed to get in contact with mum and dad. They were up at my grandma's house. I knew they were, you know, when I'd gone up to their house to flipping potentially rob them again. And I rang them up and just said, look, you know, if you can get me a lift to Blackpool, you know, I'll sign my gyro. I was due a gyro on the Wednesday. I'll sign my gyro over to you and I just need a lift there. And you know, and they're desperate, you know what I mean? They've been kind of, they got all that information from Families Anonymous a couple of years earlier, you know, telling him, don't believe a word he says. Don't give him any money. Throw him out your house, you know, all that sort of. And I was like, who are this firm? You know, who's giving them this info? Do you know what I mean? So I ended up, in a treatment facility. And the weird thing about it was, as soon as I got in treatment and I saw the word God, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, not that one again. Because I used to invite the Jehovah's Witnesses in when I was stoned to argue with them, do you know what I mean? I was a bit bored. I'd go, come in, yeah, I'll listen to your message, you know what I mean? And what happened was, you know, it took me years in recovery to make the connection. In desperation, I got on my knees and asked for help, and within 20 or 24 hours, I'm in a 12-step treatment centre, and I've never heard of 12 steps. Within a few days from that, they took me to a meeting of NA. There's one NA meeting a week in Blackpool at the time, and there was one girl who had over 12 months clean in that meeting, and she was like the local guru, do you know what I mean? And everybody kind of like looked over a year, do you know what I mean? And I remember my first meeting of NA, grabbing hold of her at the end of the meeting, and I knew her, I recognised she used to live in Manchester, she used to live right by where I used to live, and she was a prostitute, and I pulled her up and I said, what, over a year, with nothing, not a weed, nothing, do you know what I mean? And she was like, yeah, nothing, do you know what I mean? Because I couldn't fathom it. It was too much to take. Total abstinence never crossed my mind in my entire active addiction. It never once came into the equation to stop using everything. And it never crossed my mind, do you know what I mean, until I came into NA. And I thought it was a bit strong. And I thought the disease was a nice cop-out to kind of make them feel a bit better about themselves for having robbed old ladies' handbags or whatever they'd been doing, do you know what I mean? But they told me to keep coming back, and it was the first place in a long time I felt welcome. And people treated me like a kind of, you know, a human being. And I've kept coming to meetings. And it kind of blows my mind what's gone on, you know. It just absolutely blows me away. You know, the fellowship of NA and the programme of NA are two very different things. I stayed clean on desperation in the fellowship for nearly 2 years without any kind of real, any programme as such, you know. I had no method for taking care of my fear. I had no method for taking care of my resentments. I had no kind of, I didn't understand what the power that's greater than me that was going to keep me clean was. I just didn't know, do you know what I mean? I've been in a treatment centre, and I was thinking about this the other day, because I was in a meeting the other day, I've just come back from America, and I was in a meeting over there, and I was thinking about when I first came to meetings, and the 12 steps were read, it just didn't register. The 12 steps did not register with me. I just had no connection with them at all. How they were going to keep me from using drugs, kind of words like defects of character and moral inventories, didn't do you any good when it's kind of 11 o'clock at night and you're on Claremont Road and you've kind of, you know, and you've got some 15-year-old kid with a pocket full of rocks. Do you know what I mean? I just didn't think I kind of needed any of that stuff really. But they said keep coming back, and I did like the sound of my own voice, which I kind of still do a little bit, you know. And I thought, well, this is all right. I'd come here and just kind of spout off a bit, you know. And I was in a treatment centre, and they were giving us step work, and it'd say, step two, read step two in the basic text. Oh, well, they won't know I haven't done that bit, do you know what I mean? So I wouldn't read it, you know, and I'd see the basic text on the side, and it's kind of got that blue cover, and it didn't look very interesting, do you know what I mean? It's kind of, there's got to be something, they won't allow us, I was complaining about the fact we weren't allowed magazines in there, do you know what I mean? But that basic text, and sack that, do you know what I mean? It's kind of like conservative blue cover, do you know what I mean? And it's like, no, not for me, that, and so I'd, you know, I didn't piece any of this stuff together for a while, and I went, and I had a tough time in treatment. You know, I was constantly on these kind of contracts where they wouldn't allow me out on my own, and you know, and I would, you know, any time I felt bad about myself, I'd go and shut myself in my room. Do you know what I mean? Pull my quilt over me and put my basic text on my chest and like crash out. Do you know what I mean? And kind of if anyone came in, and said, I was reading the literature and I just fell asleep. Do you know what I mean? And I had no kind of, you know, I just didn't make the connections. And what happened was they said to me, when I was leaving treatment, they said, get yourself a sponsor and look for the person who's got what you want. And so I was like, okay, fine. Anyway, this Cockney fella rolls into Blackpool a couple of months earlier, and he's like, he's 4 years clean, and he's got this garage, yeah, where he sort of fixes Volkswagens. And what happens was he's coming to meetings. Every meeting he comes to, he's in a different motor. He's out with a different woman every weekend. He always had like a wad of cash with him with a big rubber band around it. Do you know what I mean? And he was 4 years clean. And they said, look for the person who's got what you want. And I thought, that's what I want. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be kind of sitting drinking herbal tea and talking about God. That's what I want to be doing, you know what I mean? Different woman everywhere and a nice wad of cash. That'll suit me, do you know what I mean? And so I said to him, you know, would you sponsor me? He said, yeah, I'll sponsor you, no problem, yeah. So he was my sponsor for a while, and he kind of said to me, he said, come over and we'll have a sponsor meal. So I get around there, and he's cooking the meat, and he's pouring special brew on it as he's cooking it. And I'm thinking, there's something not right here, do you know what I mean? It's kind of, I don't know much, but that's not right, do you know what I mean? And he was using the old time, he was sponsoring me. I kind of stayed clean, but he didn't. You know what I mean? I kind of laugh about it, but the sad thing about it is, you know, I know he's been in three treatment centres since, do you know what I mean? And the last I heard was about 3 or 4 years ago. Guy might be dead now, do you know what I mean? And that's the sad thing about it, you know, is that, you know, this thing is a serious matter we're dealing with. You know, this thing doesn't kind of take any prisoners. It eats people alive, you know. I say tonight I sponsor people. I've got people I sponsor here, you know. And as a sponsor, I'm not there to sort of, you know, I do tell people when I sponsor them, if you want a kind of somebody to sort of just bang on about whatever you want to bang on about, you know, there's people you can pay £60 an hour to listen to that, you know. My role as a sponsor is to guide people through the steps. But I've sponsored people who've tried to do it their way, and I've split with sponsees in the past, and I've buried one sponsee, and you know, and it's and it's a serious business. Someone said to me that I went to a meeting at lunchtime today, and someone turned to me and they said, amazing, you got 12 years, you know. Not many people get 12 years. And I said, yeah, well, not many people listen to the instructions. You know, because we've got, like, you know, we read it at the beginning of the meeting. It's read at the beginning of every meeting, the simple instructions. If you follow the instructions, you stay clean. The addiction's not like the carpet monster. It doesn't jump up from behind the settee and make you used. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, there's certain things and that we have to do in order to stay clean, you know. And I'm kind of jumping about a little bit here. You know, I love being a part of this, and I love being a part of this whole kind of process. You know, I stayed clean on desperation and meetings for a while, and then I kind of bottomed out clean. What happened was I was about 18 months clean, and I bottomed. You know, I was full of fear, I was full of self-obsession, I was depressed, I was angry, and I was going home at night after meetings and after kind of going out to the cinema with a bunch of my peers, and looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, I'm not going to keep this up. I'm not going to stay for the long haul if it continues like this, because it's not getting better. All this thing about, you know, stick around, it gets better. What they should say, stick around, it gets better if you work the program. Because if you ain't working this program, in my experience, it don't get better. And what happened was, you know, I've muddled my way through, I guess. I got a sponsor. I used to travel to Lancaster, about 30 miles up the road, to a meeting where there's a few people there who had some clean time. And I got a sponsor there, and he sponsored me till I was about 5.5 years, and then we kind of split up, and then I didn't have a sponsor for nearly... I was 6 years clean trying to find a sponsor in NA. I found it quite difficult to do, because by that time I knew quite a lot of people. And so I was like, no, I don't want him, because I know what he did that time after that newcomer, and, you know, and all that kind of, you know, judging people. Oh, no, I'm not new. And I was really, like, reluctant to sort of, you know, none of them were good enough, do you know what I mean? And I got a sponsor, and that didn't work out. And then I got the sponsor I've got now. And it's been really good, you know. It's really changed my recovery dramatically. You know, I really strongly advocate sponsorship, you know. I shared in a meeting when I was about 4 years clean. I remember I used to say, when I was using, I went to the guy who had the best gear and the best deals. And that's what I have to do in recovery. If I knew anyone that could sponsor me better than my sponsor, I'd change my sponsor, because I need all the help I can get against this thing. And you know, and this guy, what happened was, when I was in Blackpool and there was this tiny fellowship, I remember the first time I broke up in a sort of relationship in recovery, if you can call it that, I was in the fetal position, do you know what I mean? Kind of on the floor, like, oh, gee, what is this? Do you know what I mean? I've got a lump of rejection. And I lived opposite an heroin dealer, and I really wanted to use. And really wanted to use. And I went to meetings, and I kept talking to people, and I felt like I was just trying to keep my head above water. I felt like I was drowning, and just trying to keep my head above water, do you know what I mean? Like getting sucked into a whirlpool. It's only a matter of time before I'm going to pick it up. But, you know, I'm keeping my head above water by speaking to people and by picking the phone up and going to meetings and praying, but it just wasn't budging, do you know what I mean? I remember waking up, you know, it was the desire to use, like, you know, the desire to use was kind of keeping me awake, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I had that desire to not use. I remember waking up and thinking, I'm just going to stay in bed today, because as long as I'm in this bed, I can't get 20 drugs. Do you know what I mean? As long as I'm in it. And I went to a meeting, and it was an AA meeting, thank God for AA, because there wasn't enough NA to stay clean on at that time in Blackpool. And this guy, I went to his house after for a coffee, and he said, oh, I've got a tape here. He said, it's some guy speaking at a convention. He said, you did a lot of drugs, didn't you? I said, oh, yeah, I did a few drugs. He said, oh, check this tape out. And he gave me this tape of this guy. And I got home and I put it on and I laughed and I really connected with it, do you know what I mean? And I could almost kind of recite the stuff this guy was saying, do you know what I mean? Years later, two friends of mine are in a band, a rock band, and they were going off on tour in America supporting Marilyn Manson on tour, do you know what I mean? And they rung me up and they said, oh, can you give us all of them recovery tapes, because we're going to be on the road. And all them Bible Belt people are going to be outside every gig, and Manson has hundreds of groupies, and it's, you know, it's just really kind of. And I said, yeah, I'll give you some tips. And I said, this is a particular favourite of mine. It really helped me out of a spot when I was really wanting to use early on, and I gave them the tape. Anyway, I went over to LA a year or two later, and I was staying at their house, and they said to me, and well, they came back up to where they stayed clean, and they rang me up and they said, yeah, it's great, that tape. So I'm staying at their house, and they went, that guy who was on that tape you lent us, we met him at a meeting, and we've got his number. Like, you're joking. And I said, give me his number, you know. And I've met a lot, I mean, what I'm a big music fan. I've met a lot of my kind of musical heroes, a lot of people I look up to, I've met, you know, but I really so wanted to meet this guy because he played such an important role. And I called him up and I was like, I really want to thank you, you know, you're the one that kept me clean through my early recovery. And he went, well, I'll take credit if you like, but, you know, if you've been around kind of 9 years, you probably know a bit better than that by now. And I was like, and so I ended up meeting him for a meeting, and we went out and we sat down for a meal. And he said to me, he says, okay, then. He said, so how long clean are you? I said, for 9 years. Okay, you doing service? Doing service, yep. He said, sponsoring people? Sponsoring people, check. Right, yeah. There you go. So go on then, Gary, tell us what powerlessness is. He said, well, you know, pick up the first one, I can't stop. He said, no, that's the result of being powerless. I said, well, it says in the book, doesn't it? When I pick up the first one, sets off a mental obsession coupled with a physical compulsion, a phenomenon of craving. He's gone, yeah, now you're spitting the book at me. Though the results are being powerless. What's powerlessness? You know, powerless, isn't it? You know, first one, he's like, I said, well, you tell me. He said, well, you're the guy 9 years at sponsoring people and telling all these people how to do this program. Now tell me about the first part of the first step. So I'm going, well, by now I'm feeling really stupid, you know what I mean? I've kind of like, I've checked in on all counts and I can't answer the first part of the first step. He said, well, you know, do you want me to tell you? I said, yeah, go on, tell me. He said, powerlessness is a lack of power. And I went, oh, I knew that. And he went, well, if you knew that, why didn't you tell me that then? Because if you know it, why aren't you telling it me? If you can't tell it to me, how are you going to relate to somebody who's new in here and doesn't know what they're doing? It was a lack of power. Yeah, yeah, all right. I know. Yeah, but. And he basically said, so what's the power that keeps you clean? You know, as I said earlier, I had a desire to stop using before I came here. So what's the power that keeps you clean? You know, and I've learned that there's a difference between, for me, there's a big difference between a power greater than myself and a higher power. A power greater than myself, the power greater than me that I need and absolutely depend upon to stay clean is a fellowship coupled with a program. A higher power is God. You know, so the first part of the first step, I'm admitting the need for a fellowship coupled with a program. It says in the second step in the basic text, we can utilise this power long before we understand what it is. I was 9 years clean and didn't understand what the power was. That's the power that keeps me clean, the fellowship coupled with a program. That's why when people get all spiritually zealous and get on God trips and get so godly that they think they don't need meetings anymore, a lot of them end up using. Because they've got God, but they haven't got the power. So the power comes from the fellowship coupled with the program. So as a result of not having a fellowship and program, my life was unmanageable. And a dictionary definition of manage is to successfully deal with. As a result of not having a fellowship and a program, I couldn't successfully deal with life because the disease that I'm powerless over kept making me use. You know, I was using against my will. So I've come in here and I've connected with a power that I can absolutely depend upon to keep me clean. And the second step talks about a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Which is what I come to meetings for. You know, the sanity in the second step for me is a sanity to not use. Because with my history of using, picking up drugs, picking up any kind of drug, and thinking I can just have one, is not a good idea. So basically, that first, the second step, and I have to get a power in place. There's a lot of people in NA walk around powerless. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they stay clean. I've got no power to. If I'm powerless, what's keeping me clean? I was powerless before I came here because I used to say, tomorrow I'm not doing this anymore, and I get up and do it again. But I'm not powerless now. I'm empowered because I've connected. In and of myself, I'm powerless. Left to my own devices, on my own for long enough, I'll become powerless. But I've connected with a power. I'm powerful. I'm empowered. I've got so much power, I've got to keep giving it away. So, you know, I once I understood that, you know, I was starting to go to steadily less and less meetings because I was starting to believe all those bullshit myths in NA, you know, that kind of, well, he's been around over 10 years, so he just comes once a month, you know, he's really busy with his family and all that crap. You know, I'm as powerless now as I was the day I walked in and of myself. It's just I've got a bit more knowledge. So the disease that I'm arresting, I have to keep coming and checking in with this power. And then, you know, I made a third step decision. You know, and that was the thing that I needed to clear the wreckage of my past. I needed to straighten myself out. I needed to straighten out the resentments, the fears, the harms I was doing to people, my sex conducts. I had to look at all that stuff and I had to get honest with somebody. And honesty is the key to it all. You know, if you come into meetings and you aren't being honest, you might as well not be at meetings. If you ring your sponsor, you aren't being honest, you might as well not have a sponsor. Because whatever sponsor you've got, no matter how much clean time they've got, they can't help you if you ain't telling them the truth. Because it's when two addicts get together, sharing honestly with each other, that creates the power that's greater than both of them that they can absolutely depend on to stay clean. And you know, and it blows me away. I've done inventories. This last year in my recovery, I've been working a step 10 inventory. I write step 10 at night. I never thought I'd do that. I thought, yeah, I'll do that further down the line. And then further down the line, I'll do it further down the line. And further down the line, further down the line. And you know, the end of last summer, I had a beginning of September, I got my partner bought me a hardback book, and I keep it at the side of my bed, and I write my step 10 before I go to bed. And I examine my day, and I say, well, you know, where was I dishonest? Where was I resentful? Where was I fearful? Where was I self-centered? Was there something I should have shared with another person that I've kept to myself? Do I owe any apologies? What could I have done better? And did I spend most of today thinking about me, or was I thinking about what I can do for other people? Because that was the thing with me. When I was a kid, I ain't come from a, you know, I know some people in here do, but my family, it wasn't like, you know, I can't kind of go, oh yeah, I can't put my addiction down to any kind of abuse. Much as I might, you know, when I was early in recovery, I was kind of looking for things like that to stick, you know, pin the tail on the donkey. I can't put it down to that because I was so inwardly focused. No matter how much love I got, no matter how much affirmation I got, no matter how much you would have given me, it would never have been enough because I was so inwardly focused. And so, you know, I examine me, you know, I look over my day and you know, and I've made amends in recovery. And the thing is, when I got into this program, the process of working the program, the things that come out of that are just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable, the experiences, you know. And I've got and I've got money, property and prestige, you know. I can kind of give a good sort of like success story about the guy who came from nothing and now he's doing this, you know, and doing all this stuff, but ultimately, you know, people who know me well know what I do for a living, and I have quite an exciting kind of lifestyle, as society would see, but nothing in my life gives me the excitement that this gives me. Nothing touches it. You know, I was in New York this week. I got back from New York yesterday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was really, I'm a bit jet lagged now. I feel a bit all over the place. And I went out to New York, and I usually go to about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 meetings a week. And I'd gone to a meeting on the Monday, and then a couple of days had passed, and things had happened, and I'd not got to a meeting, and I flew out to New York, and it was busy, and I was jet lagged, and I got to a meeting on the Saturday afternoon, but I had to leave this meeting early, and I hate leaving meetings early because I like the ritual, you know. It's a spiritual program. I like the ritual of the moment silence, and I like the ritual of joining hands at the end and saying the serenity prayer. I like all that stuff, and I had to leave this meeting early. So it felt like I'd done like half a meeting in a week. And I was doing this big event on Tuesday night in New York in this huge fashion show in this old bank on Wall Street, and what happened was Monday, kind of running about doing stuff and sorting things out, and what had happened was I manage a team of people in America, I manage a team of people over here, and I got all these people together, and we all like went out for a meal on the Sunday night, and I felt like, because I'd not been to a meeting, that sensitivity had kind of come to the surface, and I said, I want an open forum to discuss our work, and all of a sudden people start firing all this stuff at me, right? And I started taking it all really personally, do you know what I mean? And I'm taking it all on board, and what happened was, you know, I got back to my hotel, and I didn't like what she said. And I'm picking through it all in my head, you know, and I go into work the next day and I thought, and I'm thinking, you've been too nice to these people. You've tried to play a friend to them, but you're a manager. Go in there and show them you're a manager. Do you know what I mean? So I kind of go in and I'm like, good morning, Garrett. Morning. You know, and it's like, and everything all right? Yeah. You know, and by the end of the day, you know, like that voice inside's going, they can see right through you. They know what you are. Everyone around here knows you're a fraud. You've chanced it. You've got yourself to the top of the tree, but everyone in here can see right through you. You're transparent. You're transparent. And the fear starts kicking in. How are you ever going to manage these people now? They've lost all respect for you. You know, and it's like, why don't you just go in there and throw a tantrum? Why don't you know, all this kind of... I thought, there's one place I need to be right now. One place on earth that will sort this out. And it's a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Nowhere else is going to sort out what's happening right now but a meeting with Narcotics Anonymous. So then it's like, so I took myself off into a room, I ring the helpline over there. Answer phone message, there's no volunteers at present, so we'll give you a meeting. It's like, oh, same old NA, do you know what I mean? And so no disrespect to people who do helplines, but you know how it is. It's flipping always happens when I'm in other countries as well. I'm thinking, New York Fellowship, big as it is, and they can't even volunteer when I need them. Do you know what I mean? And so what happens is I got a couple of meeting addresses and got myself out of work into a taxi and down to this meeting. Gets to the meeting, and that was it. And the meeting on the previous Saturday, I took this kid's number down when I was there because he recognised me from the last time I was in New York. He'd seen me at a meeting then. And I took his number down and knew where to find. I've got a word to find. I ripped the cover off because when you're going into America, you don't want something saying narcotics on it. And if you want to get through their customs these days, do you know what I mean? So I've got his number in. So I get to this church and I'm hanging around. And there's no one there. And the meeting's not on. And it's on their answer phone. And so I'm really on one then, do you know what I mean? I'm like, they don't have any volunteers on their outline. The poxy meeting's not even on and it's on their answer phone message. They've not even sorted out. You know, like, and you know, NA is run by amateurs, of which I'm one. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of so I'm getting on one by then. Do you know what I mean? I really need a meeting, and so I'd rung this kid up earlier on and got his answer form, and he's not run me back. And I thought I'm just going to try him again. Do you know what I mean? So I dialed him up, and this is the day before my birthday. Do you know what I mean? My clean birthday. So I ring him up and the phone rings and it was one of them, yes, it's ringing, you know, that, it's in my blood, that thing, when the phone, you know what I mean, mobile's ringing, yes, do you know what I mean? And I ring him up and he says, oh, I'm just on my way to a celebration meeting in Brooklyn. And I said, great. So and he was about five blocks away and I walked up and I met him. And in fact, we were that busy chatting on the phone, it's mad. I'm walking along with my head down chatting, and he must have been walking along with his head down chatting, and we'd actually passed each other. You know what I mean? And what happened was he said, I met him and he took me to this meeting up in Brooklyn, and we were the only two white faces in the meeting, and there was a metal detector to get into the building, do you know what I mean? It was an homeless shelter in Brooklyn, and you know, often people, you know, they, like, a guy from England, and then get up for 12 years, you know what I mean? It was just amazing. It was just amazing. And, you know, and then the next day we did the event, and the event went great, you know what I mean? And afterwards, I'm sitting in a party after this event, and it was like a kind of, you know, it was a pretty lavish party, and there's, you know, models and a few famous people, and one thing, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, 12 years ago today, you know, what I was doing to what I'm doing right now. I'll be getting on a plane tomorrow to fly back business class because I've got to be at a world premiere of a film on Thursday night. And then, you know, just as I'm trying to shake off the jet lag, I'm going to get on another plane to Maldives on Sunday with my fiance and sit on the white beach for 2 weeks, you know what I mean? And people wonder why I get infused about NA. Do you know what I mean? People wonder, it's kind of... You know, and I sat there, and that's one of the things about having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, I have these attacks where I'm just there, and I see everything in its rightful perspective. And I'm not wishing I was somewhere else. And I'm just there, and I go, this is incredible. This is just
unbelievable. This blows my mind. And I thought, you know what I need to do? Tomorrow morning I need to get up first thing, and I need to be at that 9 o'clock meeting, the wake-up meeting. And I need to go in there and share my clean time and show them people that have got 30 days, that are struggling, that don't believe in the 12 steps and certainly don't want the God, that this programme works. And so that's what I did, you know. I got myself, I woke up at 10 to 9 the next morning and I was a bit fuzzy-headed, and I pulled some track pants on, put a T-shirt on, jumped in a taxi, got there just as the meeting was starting. And celebrated my recovery with them people. Didn't know any of them. Do you know what I mean? Didn't know any of them, and then got and then came back, you know. And yeah, I'm infused about it. You know, my reasons for staying clean are very different. It's not like I'm sprinting as fast as I can in the opposite direction. It's more like I've got such an incredible life as a result of doing this. I have to keep making deposits in the insurance policy. This is the insurance policy that enables me to maintain and keep that life that I've got. You know, all that thing about bridge to normal living, it is that, but it's not bridge to normal. I thought, you know, nowadays I kind of sometimes hear that, and yeah, it's, you know, sometimes it's a justification for not going to meetings. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want to recover on my own. Why would I want to do this on my own? You know, some of the people I've met in these rooms, amazing. I've never had friendships like I get in here. You know, I've never, the stuff that goes on in here, it just blows me away. You know, I've always been active in service. You know, I know Janie talks about it, and H&I is my favourite form of service. You know, I like going to hospitals, I like going into institutions, and you know, and yeah, and I love what I have. You know, I kind of feel like yeah, 40 minutes in now, so I guess I'll wrap it up there. It's really nice to be here. Thanks everyone for coming, and thanks for listening. Thanks.